Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK.
Coming up on this week's show, Upfront talks to Troy Powell, Artistic Director for ALEY 2, about their upcoming Atlanta engagement at the Rialto Center for the Arts. Ronald B. Williams from the Collective Culture is here to chat about the upcoming stage adaptation of Ta-Nehisi Coates' Between the World and Me. And WCLK alumnus and media star Patrick L. Riley is here to chat about his new book and more. We'll also be playing music from Ledisi, Gretchen Parlato, and Diana Ross. But first, here's a word from our underwriters.
Support for WCLK programming comes from The Collective Culture, presenting the Apollo Theater stage adaptation of Ta-Nehisi Coates' Between the World and Me for two performances on Tuesday, October 22nd at 3 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. at Atlanta Symphony Hall. The event features Lynn Whitfield, Omar Dorsey, Ledisi, Pauletta Washington, and more. Ticket information is available at 800-745-3000 or online at Ticketmaster.com.
The autumn leaves judge by my window, baby. The autumn leaves of red and gold. I see your lips, those summer kisses, yes. Those summer.
This is Lisa Arendelle, and you're listening to Ray Cornelius on Upfront.
That was the voice of singer, songwriter, and budding actress Ledisi and her version of the jazz classic Autumn Leaves. She will be performing this Tuesday night at Atlanta Symphony Hall as part of the stage adaptation of Ta-Nehisi Coates' book Between the World and Me. Ronald B. Williams from the Collective Culture, one of the presenters of the show, stopped by to chat about the performance and what fans can expect.
Ronald B. Williams, welcome back to Upfront. How are you?
I am doing great. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. You know, it's been, I'd say, like maybe 2 months since the last time you were here. I didn't have you on the air. I actually had Camila Forbes from the Apollo on the air to talk about this amazing event that is coming to Atlanta this Tuesday, Between the World and Me. It's Ta-Nehisi Coates' amazing book coming to life on stage, a stage adaptation, live adaptation of this amazing work. And you guys have some major folks that are attached to this that during the first interview, we did not have that information, but now we can announce that. So let's get into the stars that are going to be on stage for that event.
Well, we have T.I., who is definitely so much of what Atlanta is and has to offer.
Yeah.
He's a very charismatic. He's conscious. He's authentic.
He's the king of the South.
He is the king of the South. So you can definitely say that. You got Killer Mike, who has a really interesting platform, very thoughtful. Again, another conscious brother who is a big fan of Ta-Nehisi Coates as well.
Okay.
Who I think is, again, who's authentically Atlanta. We have Omar Dorsey, who's an incredible actor as well, who's East Side Atlanta, but he's still Atlanta.
Yeah, he's representing Decatur.
Decatur, where's Crater? Yeah, that's what they say. I'm from Southwest, so I have a hard time saying that, but I can say it on this show.
You're from the SWATs.
I'm from the SWATs. So Omar is awesome. It's great to have him. He's Queen Sugar. He's in a new Harry Tubman movie,
which I saw. It's amazing.
So he's phenomenal.
Yeah,
we've got Pauletta Washington, who was also in the performance in New York, who did an incredible job. It's also Denzel Washington's wife.
And let me say, because I think a lot of times when we say her name, we automatically think of Denzel, but she is an amazing actress as well.
Is.
I've seen her in a couple of independent films, and she's done some stage stuff over with Kenny Leon. So
yeah, Pauletta is awesome.
Love her energy.
Yeah. Ledisi, who also is in the performance in Washington, D.C., from what I'm told, she did an excellent performance with Black Thought in D.C. I missed that. But according to Camila, it was really something to see.
Yeah.
Had to be. They got a 6-minute standing ovation in D.C., so it had to be special. We've got Mark
Bamuthi.
Joseph. Morehouse guy. He was also in the performance in New York, and he really, I remember his performance. He put so much into it. It was really, really powerful. He had a really awesome version in the stage adaptation in New York that really it's an indelible. It's indelible to me because I still remember it. Every time I hear it, I'm just like, wow, that is powerful. He did a great job.
He's an amazing spoken word performer. I don't want to call him an artist, but a performer, because he really it's almost, I mean, seeing him on stage is like watching a show in and of itself, because he's just so into the words.
Definitely. Yeah. Other person we have is Michelle Wilson, who is a Tony nominated actress in Sweat. She's incredible. She was also in the Harlem version. She was the very first night that I saw the performance, she was a part of it. So she's incredible as well. We got Greg Alvarez Reed, and we've got more. We got also a special surprise guest for Atlanta that you all would just have to wait and see.
Yeah, you can't give us a hint?
No hints.
No.
I can tell you will be impressed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, because you're helping to present this, and this was something that was kind of sort of a something that came out of your mind, and you contacted the Apollo, and they kind of put all of this stuff together, and then you guys decided to bring it here to Atlanta. What was it about the story or the book that made you want to kind of get behind it and really push it out there for the masses to hear about it?
There's a couple of things. I think the first thing that really struck me just from an internal standpoint was I was in awe that Camila Forbes would take such a literary classic and really make it into something really even more to where people could share it as a collective group.
Okay.
I would say that the stage in itself, the lighting, the theatrics behind it was phenomenal. I love how Jason Moran was able to compose the score for Between the World and Me. And then the performers and what they were able to do with Ta-Nehisi's words and bringing those words to life, to where basically when you were in the Apollo Theater, you just felt at one with the presentation. And so I think all of those things were things that got me really excited about bringing this to Atlanta and wanting to share this with this community.
Yeah. What do you want audiences to walk away with when they leave the performance on Tuesday?
I want them to walk away with just a really an appreciation for Ta-Nehisi, for Jason Moran, Camila Forbes, the Apollo Theater, but also more importantly, art in itself and how art is such a truth that whatever they're experiencing that evening, that they take that away and they do something really amazing with it. Like Camila, when she read, you know, Ta-Nehisi's book Alone, she wants to produce the stage adaptation and she wanted to share it with a broader group. When I saw it, you know, I wanted to bring it to Atlanta. I'm hoping that same pattern of action and sharing it with others will continue after someone sees this or after everybody sees this in Atlanta.
All right. You can get more information about Between the World and Me at WCLK.com. You can get ticket information as well as watch a sneak peek of what's to come on Tuesday. So cannot wait to be there and check that out.
Thank you so much for having me, Ray.
All right.
Support for WCLK programming comes from Georgia State's Rialto Center, presenting ALE2, The Next Generation of Dance, on Saturday, October 26th at 8 p.m. The evening will feature South African-born choreographer Bradley Shelver's Where There Are Tongues, Souk by Andrea Miller, and Still by former ALE dancer Kervin Douthit Boyd. Ticket information is available online at rialto.gsu.edu.
Loving you is wonderful, something like a miracle. Rest assured, I feel the same way you do. Meeting you isn't hard.
This is Omar Dorsey, aka Hollywood of Queen Sugar, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
My next guest is Troy Powell, artistic director of ALE 2. The renowned dance company will be in town next weekend for their annual Rialto Center for the Arts performance, and Troy is here to talk about this year's premieres and much more. Well, Troy Powell, welcome back to Upfront. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am doing just fine. You know, we're always excited to know when ALE, or to know that ALE is going to be coming to the Atlanta area. And man, we, as soon as we hear the music, as soon as we see the flyers, as soon as we get the emails, it's like, you know, everyone's, you know, we just get so excited. And you guys are on tour and bringing that amazing show to Atlanta, to the Rialto Center for the Arts over at Georgia State University. And really excited, like I said, to have you guys back. This is your third season, correct? Coming back to Atlanta for the Rialto?
Yes, this is our third season coming back. Actually, this will probably be our fourth season coming back to the Rialto, and it is just an honor because we really consider Atlanta home now, and I know that I've been dancing with the company. Back when I danced in the company back in the 90s, we would always come to Atlanta, and it's all, you guys have always been so hospitable. You guys have always been so kind. You've always been so open to loving and helping us celebrate with the Ailey spirit. So it's just an honor. We are so excited to come back to Atlanta and Louis Alto and, you know, perform for such wonderful audiences in Atlanta.
Yeah. And you guys always bring cutting edge performances. It's always new choreography from new choreographers. Of course, these are dancers that are making their way to the main company, but really is Ailey 2 is sort of a breeding ground for young and aspiring dancers and performing artists, correct?
Yeah. Ailey 2, when Mr. Ailey started the company as an ensemble, he wanted the students of the Ailey School to be able to have the opportunity to know what it's like to become professional dancers, to be able to know what it's like to become, you know, performers. He wanted them to have a smooth yet inspiring educational transition from the classroom to the stage. We have students taking classes, 15 classes a week for 3 and 4 years of their lives, and what do you do with that afterwards? So when he started Ailey 2, he handpicked 12 of the most promising students at the Ailey School, where these students would get the opportunity to know what it's like to become professional dancers and to step into that arena in more or less a smooth way. And not only for dancers, but for choreographers. He wanted these dancers to know what it's like to work with emerging choreographers, and also for these emerging choreographers to get the opportunity to work with young, trained young professional dancers.
Exactly. So we have this amazing performance coming from South African-born choreographer Bradley Shelvers, Where There Are Tongues. Let's talk about that performance.
Yeah, Bradley Shelver is a young, up-and-coming choreographer. I've been watching his works for many years. And when I invite choreographers in, I like for choreographers to challenge the dancers, not only technically, but definitely psychologically. And when he came in, he wanted to create a work that talked about community. He wanted to create a work that talked about how we're all put on this earth, we're put on this planet, we're put in this dance world, and how we all love and how we all support one another. And that goes back to, you know, him being invited to Ailey as a student, and then also being a member of Ailey too. He sort of felt he got all of his education, his dance inspiration from being at Ailey. So he wanted to give this piece as a gift to Ailey too, and show that, you know, he has grown as not only a choreographer, but definitely as a young human being.
Mm-hmm. The show is also going to feature former Ailey dancer Kervin Dothit Boyd and his performance of Still. Can we talk about that one as well?
Yeah, this is a great piece, because this is a world premiere that we're doing. I invited Kervin in this year, and I always like to invite dancers that are familiar with Ailey to the dancers, as well as for the students. And of course, Kervin danced with Ailey 2. He was a student, and as well as a member of the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater for many years. So he has an understanding of the aesthetic. He has an understanding of the vision. He has an understanding of the mission. So when I invited him in, the process was just so seamless, and it was just so endless. And he wanted to create a work that talked about the Harlem Renaissance and create a more theatrical work talking about what went back, what happened back in the day in the Harlem Renaissance. We had these activists, we had these writers, and we had these poets, and we knew about them for what they did, but we didn't know what went on behind closed doors, specifically in the LGBT community. So he sort of touches on that and educates us on what happened back then and still can sort of relate to what's happening now. But now, you know, it's on the forefront. You know, the LGBTQ community is very, you know, is everywhere you go, you see it, and we're celebrating it, as opposed to back in, you know, back in the 20s and the 30s, where you couldn't really talk about it. So he wanted to create a work, more or less, not too literal, a contemporary version of the Harlem Renaissance and talking about those elements in particular.
Support for WCLK programming comes from Kenny Leon's True Colors Theater Company, presenting Paradise Blue, September 24th through October 20th at the Southwest Arts Center, with live original music from Russell Gunn. Every night follows the story of a trumpeter named Blue, who is considering selling his once thriving jazz club. A sultry woman with a mysterious past enters the scene with her own plans and turns everyone's lives upside down. Ticket information is available at truecolorstheater.org.
This is Coleman Domingo, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
That was the voice of music legend Diana Ross performing the Billie Holiday classic, My Man. She is just one of the many famous faces featured in the book of my last guest, Patrick L. Riley. That's What Friends Are For, On the Women Who Inspired Me, is his way of saying thank you to the countless music, TV, and film divas that have shaped his career as a journalist, producer, and red carpet correspondent. He stopped by Upfront recently to chat about this and much more. Patrick L. Riley, welcome home, and welcome to Upfront. How are you?
I am so excited to be here with you, Ray, and to be on Upfront.
Yeah.
Because what you must know, it's been many years since I've been here at WCLK, but I do keep up with your work.
Oh,
and I'm proud to
thank you.
Be here in your face, because
yeah.
I'm reading your great entertainment
yeah.
and arts work
yeah.
all the time.
Oh, thank you very much. So for our listeners, we've been trying to get together for at least, I'd say, probably within the last year.
Yes.
You coming in and out of the city. Then we talking about some of the clients that you've actually brought
Absolutely,
to the station
yes.
And that I've had on the show.
Miko Branch.
Yeah, Miko, yeah, yeah.
Beautiful,
yeah.
beautiful client I had for 5 years. We just wrapped our love affair
right.
in July. Miss Jessie's, the founder and CEO of Miss Jessie's. And you were so gracious to have her on.
Yeah.
Amazing interview.
Oh.
You know, as a brand ambassador, my job is to attract good press her way.
Yeah.
She was so happy that day. So
oh, wow.
I look to be as happy
yeah.
when we wrap.
But you're here for another reason. We're going to be talking about your amazing new book, That's What Friends Are For, On the Women Who Inspire Me. But let's talk about your start here, because bringing you into the studio was kind of like a family reunion. You actually got your start right here on the campus of Morehouse College, as well as taking classes here at Clark College, and you worked right here at WCLK. So let's talk about that.
Literally, I started Morehouse in 1988 with the vision that I'd follow in the footsteps of Bill Nunn and Spike Lee and all the great big brothers from the AUC, Monty Ross, Kenny Leon. I wanted to be in arts and entertainment. And
yeah.
so was given the opportunity to cross-register so that I could be a mass communications major, which meant we utilized all of Clark's resources
yeah, yeah.
to get this degree that I have and got in 92. But one of the big things and ways in which I was trained was right here at WCLK. We had a beautiful show, not too unlike Upfront. It was called Week's End Magazine Show. Google it. I don't think there was a Google then. But all that to say, it was a wonderful weekend show.
Yeah.
Tony Phillips, great names in radio. Cindy Brooks, Baumgartner now. Daris Henson, Bobby Towns. They were all great peers with whom I worked on Week's End Magazine Show. And I did entertainment, much like you,
yeah.
You know, interviews, celebrity, but also restaurant reviews.
Yeah.
And I remember we would go, I would do the peasant restaurants, all of the restaurants like,
Peasant Pheasant
is one of them,
yeah.
but they have a number of other restaurants
that they owned.
And
I'd yeah.
just be all up and through Buckhead
yeah.
getting these great restaurants, because it would be a free meal for a hungry
yeah.
college student. And then I can inform our listeners how to get some good dining. But the people, as much as they loved it, would say, could you go to a Busy Bee?
Yeah.
Could you go to Pascal's? So that I had a soul food month
yeah.
where Yet again, I got the best of both worlds because wow. I enjoyed that food as well.
Oh my gosh! And Mix was one of my favorite restaurants when I moved Mix? Here. Yeah, it's
the chili
those are
fries,
gone now.
The nachos, yeah. all they had. It was the
yeah,
best.
Yeah. And so from there, you launched this amazing career in television and media. You worked, oh my God, with Oprah Winfrey on the Oprah Winfrey Show for
13 plus years and another 6 years of doing things with the Oprah Winfrey Network.
Yeah.
I actually started as a reporter trainee at WSB TV working under Monica Pearson,
right.
but it was Kaufman at the time.
Yeah.
And she was a great mentor who kind of got my start going as a reporter trainee. And then I helped launch as one of the first two producers, but I also did on camera and entertainment Good Day Atlanta.
Oh, wow.
It was a CBS affiliate. It's now Fox 5, okay. I know, but yeah. it was a CBS affiliate when Good Day Atlanta launched. WAGA was a CBS affiliate. Then there was a merger,
okay.
and it became a Fox affiliate. But Good Day Atlanta is mine. So during the era of TLC and Babyface and L.A. Reid launching.
Gosh. Yeah. LaFace Records.
LaFace Records. So Def with Jermaine Dupri, Dallas Austin. I worked with all of those folks, giving them their first media.
Wow.
When Lisa Left Eye Lopez burned down the house
yeah.
of her boyfriend.
Yeah.
Andre Rison.
Yeah.
We were the only kind of group to kind of get the who was the T, who was the L, who was the C. You know, they weren't household this.
Yeah.
We got it right locally.
Wow. Yeah.
But also, I was able to do the first interview after that scandal, right before the Red Light Special project was coming out.
Yeah.
So it was one of those things where, and it was a great moment because there we are doing the interview at LaFace Records and she was late again, but we just, you know, we incorporated that into the piece, you know, Lisa Left Eye, God rest her soul.
So a lot of Atlanta memories.
And then I went to New York to work for Geraldo for a couple of years as a producer for Rivera Live. And that would then transition me into wanting to do my own thing and kind of have the work I'm putting out reflect my interest, entertainment, pop culture, the divas.
Yeah.
And about a year later in 98, The Oprah Show came a-calling.
Yeah.
And they came calling once, twice, but three times. The third time was the charm. That was when I said yes to being a senior field producer for The Oprah Show. I was able to live in New York, but I had to jump out high whenever they called. So the dream assignment after dream assignment I've had the chance to do for The Oprah Show, from the Wildest Dreams days to the Remembering Your Spirit days, interviewing everybody, you know, all the greats, that would then lead up to me being assigned to be the sole interviewer, field producer for the Legends Ball, the Oprah, the iconic, legendary Legends Ball that was in Santa Barbara that she hosted in 2005. Do you remember that?
I remember that like yesterday. I still play I'll replay the Sunday brunch.
Yes.
Mic toss.
Yes.
Patti LaBelle gets me
every time. And if I could tell you to be there, you know, my knees were buckling. I just, the whole weekend, though I was there to do work, you must know this.
Yeah.
When we're up against our people that we've admired, you are the professional that you are. I am a professional.
Yeah.
But internally, I was just burning up.
You have to, when I first met Janet Jackson, it was very media, but I left the room. Actually, I left the building, went out to the parking lot, screamed to the top of my lungs.
Yes.
And Ryan Cameron was there, and he was like, "I get it." He was like, "I totally get it." And then I went right back upstairs and did what I needed to do, because I couldn't believe that I had just met her.
You know my number one diva to be
Diana
Ross.
Mine too.
Yours as well.
Mine too, yeah.
You must know there were rules at Legends.
Yeah.
We were, if you got them on day one, don't bother them on day two. Day one being the luncheon that was on Oprah's property. Day two was then the actual ball, the gala, and then day three was the
Sunday brunch.
Mm-hmm. The vision was whoever you get, just get a little sound of them on the first day. Whoever you have left, get, and then whoever you have left. Well, I spoke to Ms. Ross all 3 days. I didn't care what the rules were.
Yeah.
And I just, and she received me and I received her, and it was a love affair.
Yeah.
An engagement I never thought I would have, but it has almost continued until this day. So much so I've even been able to gift her, you know, my book project.
And so this is having that type of career gave fuel to That's What Friends Are For, correct?
It was the inspiration. Dorpy Books, a new publisher out of D.C., took a chance on me because they are sort of growing mid-career journalists who have books in them. And they had followed me and my career and the things that I had done and thought, you could do a good celebration of Black women. Yeah. You know, I have also have a blog presence. My blog, A Day in the Life of Riley, Pop Culture and Possibilities, often chronicles the divas. And so they said, this material is all there. Why don't you work with us and do a book?
Yeah.
And so I got with the amazing Clarence Haynes, who's an awesome book editor from the book world, who had time to edit my chapters. And what was great about it is that I don't know that I would have done the book had they not asked, but once they asked me to do it, it made absolute sense. And it has truly been a vibration that's helping me 25 years into my career dream bigger. You know, yeah. I think that's sort of the theme these days. I'm thinking it better and bigger. And so to be able to unpack these women in a volume based on my experiences, but also my analysis as a pop culture expert, was a dream.
Yeah.
And it has been a dream. So even to be on the road as I am promoting, I've been on the road for about a year promoting, because this is the kind of a gift that keeps on giving. It's not, I'm not playing this like on a publisher's timeline.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep on talking to people until because these are all evergreen memories that sometimes get lost in the sauce. If when we think about social media and how quickly the trolls will reduce a diva to nothingness,
or just this idea of what's relevant and what's not. I remember a situation where I was talking to a friend, and I'm not going to reveal the actress, but I mentioned an actress's name, and she was like, "Oh, she's not relevant."
Yeah,
and I was like, "No, you can't," you know. And a week later, she had booked a huge gig.
Yes.
And was all over the place. And that's when I learned that you never can discount a person. Even if you don't see them, that does not mean that they're not relevant. They could be behind the scenes. Yes. They could be working on projects that you don't know. And people like Beyonce will just drop a project with no fanfare.
Yes.
And it's like, oh my gosh, well, where did this come from?
Right.
You know what I mean? So I don't subscribe to that mindset.
And I don't either. And I wanted to sort of take ownership of it for me, because I do think that even as we may try to discount relevance in these women, sometimes people will try to discount relevance in those of us who have been on the ride.
Yeah.
And I was here, you know, no different than when Beyonce says I was here. I was here too.
Yeah.
So I thought to put it in a book, kind of, you know, now we're in the Library of Congress. Now we're available where all books are sold. People can stumble into this and be inspired. Not just diva lovers, but kids who want to figure out how to have their career be their dream, or their dream be their career. All of those kind of nuggets are in there.
Listen to the rest of my conversation with Patrick L. Riley at WCLK.com. We talk about his newest projects and the secret to his longevity in media. Well, that'll do it for this weekend's show. I'd like to thank all of my special guests, Ronald B. Williams, Troy Powell, and Patrick L. Riley. I'd also like to thank my engineer, Jami Wellman, and you. Please join us next Saturday, October 26th, for another exciting edition of Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry. Happy Saturday, Atlanta.
If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry has been brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM WCLK, an NPR member-supported station.